Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
From high above the milk packing district, in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A cyclist hits a TriMet bus, a truck driver causes a five-car highway pileup, and acid is thrown in a Vancouver woman's face.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, prepare yourselves, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor. And this is absolutely everything you need to know for Tuesday, August 31st, 2010. A bicyclist who ran into a bus in downtown Portland earlier this month was cited for a traffic violation. It happened at the Transit Mall on Southwest 6th and Morrison on August 12th, as first reported on a Bike Portland blog by blogger Jonathan Mouse.
Where did this happen? Was it in Vancouver or Portland?
It was in Portland, all right. 6th and Morrison. Richard Miller Krebs, 36, of Northeast Portland, was hospitalized and reported to be in fair condition. Portland Police Bureau spokesman Sergeant Pete Simpson said investigators interviewed witnesses and took measurements and initially said there was no major fault one way or other at the time. Krebs was later cited for failing to obey a traffic
device.
Wait,
okay, this is not an incident like happened last night. This is the guy from a couple weeks back?
Right, and they said, it was nobody's fault.
These things happen.
But then they've decided, aha, it was indeed his fault.
It was the
bicyclist's fault.
That's hard to believe, Dawn.
I know.
So did they say exactly what it was he did that contributed, the bicyclist?
He failed to obey a traffic device.
No. Now, are you sure you are not misreading this story?
I know it's hard to believe. The bicyclists here in Portland are...
They're a law-abiding people. All of them.
And so friendly.
Yes.
And cheerful to motorists that they share the road with.
Let me understand this, just because you're blowing my mind. And so I feel like Huxley style, you are just rearranging the world as I have known it, lo, these 37 years that
Down
I have...
Down is up, black is white, cats are sleeping with dogs.
It's a world gone mad. Never in the nearly four decades during which I have stomped the Terra have I heard of such a mind-blowing piece of information. You're saying the bicyclist... Now, just let me just take this step by step, because you're going a million miles an hour.
I know, it's hard. It's hard to grasp.
You're saying a bicyclist in Portland, you're saying he wasn't obeying the posted traffic regulations. You're saying a bicyclist was actually breaking the law... And that, in fact, caused a dangerous traffic situation, which then resulted in him being hit by a vehicle.
Yes.
I got to mark this day in a calendar, because I don't think we'll see the likes of this news again.
From now on, we're going to call that pulling a Krebs.
We should totally do that. We should email him and let him know that's going to happen. By the way, we've now decided to call this pulling a Krebs. Well done, jackass.
State police cited a truck driver Tuesday after a five-car wreck injured two people, one of whom was rushed to a hospital in serious condition. The crash happened at 7:25 a.m. this morning on Highway 224 near Johnson Road in Milwaukee. The driver of a commercial truck pulling a semi-trailer failed to see slowing traffic ahead of him and slammed into the back of a 2010 Honda Civic. The impact pushed the Honda Civic into the back of a utility trailer being towed by a van. The van was forced forward into a Toyota Prius,
Jesus,
which was pushed forward into the back of a 1988 Honda Civic.
Paging Officer Rube Goldberg.
The crash trapped the female driver of the Honda Civic inside her car. Firefighters had to remove her, and she was rushed to a OHSU hospital. Her name has not been released. Police identified the truck driver involved in the wreck as 64-year-old Jerome Height, who was cited on a charge of careless driving.
You sure we can't blame the Krebs guy for this, too?
He might have been there.
We should just blame him for all traffic. He should be the like an automotive Zelig.
Started just a Krebs alert.
Just
on the news.
We should have like a klaxon whenever he goes out on the road. Whenever he leaves his house on his bicycle, we should have a Googa thing that just, or sort of an air raid siren that, you know. Because, what's his first name?
I don't know.
It's funnier if I know his first name. I want to say Joe, but I think I'm just making that up as like a placeholder.
It was Richard.
So we should have like a...
Rick Krebs.
Just sort of a...
Ricky
you know,
Krebs.
One of those things that calls you to prayer if you're a Muslim or something, except it would call you to, like, hide, because Richard Krebs is on the road on his bicycle.
Because he's so unusual in that he does not follow the rules of the road and apparently is a bad citizen.
He's the exception that proves the rule, Don. That's what he is. He's the bad bicycling apple. It is ruining the whole... He's ruining a good time for everyone.
He's the guy.
That's right.
He is the one guy that gives all bicyclists a bad name.
Indeed. All right. Well, he is now an enemy of the state. Here's Don Taylor.
A woman suffered burns to her face Monday when police said someone tossed a cup of an acid-like substance into her face.
Was it acid? Because that's acid-like.
It was acid-like.
If it's acid-like, it's fundamentally acid, don't you think?
I don't know.
Okay.
Vancouver police officers were called to the area of 8th and Columbia Streets in Vancouver, Washington at 7:15 p.m. to investigate the report of an assault. The victim, who was identified as 28-year-old Bethany Storrow, said an unknown woman approached her, started a conversation with her, and then tossed some sort of liquid into her face. Storrow told police the liquid caused burning to her skin. She was wearing sunglasses at the time, and it did not appear that any of the liquid entered her eyes. Nancy Newell, Storrow's mother, said her daughter was simply getting money out of the passenger side of her car to go into Starbucks when the woman approached. "There is no sense," she said.
"There's no God.
We are a God-fearing and faith-believing people."
Are you kidding me? I was just making that up.
"And we just don't understand how somebody could just wake up and determine that they were going to do this."
It's because God hates you.
Storrow recently moved to the Vancouver area from Idaho. She was taken to a nearby hospital to be treated. The incident happened a short distance from Esther Short Park. The family said the attack appeared to be random because Storrow had never met the woman before.
Look, I don't want to be like Johnny Pedantic here, but... people who ask why something bad has happened to them, you know, why did God allow this to happen? You know, why did God, you know, allow this horrible event to afflict our family? And then go on to describe themselves as being, quote, God-fearing. Maybe the answer's in the question there, Chester.
Yeah, in the phrase.
It seems like somebody you're afraid of is a person who's likely to do bad things and who might be a little bit crazy.
Like make someone throw acid in your face.
So, you know, it's not like it's out of the question that, you know, maybe God just asked the person to blind your daughter out of a show of faith. You know, sort of Isaac style.
Honestly, if you believe in a fearsome and punishing God, and then something really random and crazy happens to you, and you say, why would God make this happen? The natural answer to that would be, it's because I'm bad.
It's because God killed... Well,
it's because I did something to piss him off.
But see, that's not even necessarily... See, from a Catholic perspective, that helps. Like, if you're a bad person, if you're evil, that'll increase the chances of a smiting. But it's not really necessary. Again, if one remembers the Old Testament, there's a...
That is true. He is fickle.
Let me tell you.
He's a fickle and sort of... And he is a random sort of fella.
About a boy named Isaac. And Isaac wasn't doing anything. Isaac, to use the modern patois, he wasn't effing with nobody. He was just walking around, herding goats or whatever it is he did.
Goats?
You know,
herding. I thought you said hurting.
No.
Goats.
See, that's a thing that would
like
get you punished.
Poking them with sharp sticks.
No. God's the one who does the poking usually. And he pokes you with a flood. And then he pokes you with fire once you're dead. Isaac just told Abraham, he said, look, I want you to fear me and worship me as the one true God. And Abraham said, no, I do. I totally do that. I hella do that. I do that 100%. And God said, I don't believe you. And Abraham said, no, really. You can ask anybody. I believe in God. You just you take a poll. Everybody will tell you. Me, God believing. Big shirt. I heart God. And then God said, you know what it really, really proved to me, that you believed, is if, you know, that son of yours, what's his name? Isaac. Yeah, Isaac. If you just go kill him for me. Do you have a rock and maybe something pointy? Yeah, really? Just go give him a good gouging right in the heart. And then Abraham put Isaac on a, and he had with the knife and the whatever, and, because God asked it. And Isaac, to the best of our knowledge, not a bad guy.
Maybe that's what happened here. God told the random woman to just throw acid in that lady's face.
Just to prove that you love him.
Yeah. So see, that should actually help prove that there is a God. To this woman that there is a God, that God just made someone throw acid in her face.
As long as people are committing what you believe to be random acts of violence, I choose to view it as proof that the God of the Old Testament still lives. Here's Don Taylor.
Paul W.S. Anderson, Mila,
there is no God.
Mila Jovovich's husband, is back to direct Resident Evil Afterlife. Mila, who starred last year in the underappreciated thriller A Perfect Getaway.
By the way, and I should have held my there is no God until you said Mila Jovovich, who is married to Paul W.S. Anderson. But who, not to be confused with Paul Thomas Anderson.
No.
Of Boogie Nights and Magnolia and There Will Be Blood.
This is Paul Anderson of Resident Evil.
Of Soldier. That's how I choose to I choose to remember him as the Paul W.S. Anderson of Soldier, starring Kurt Russell. And who also apparently gets to pork Mila Jovovich. So there you go.
Anyway, Mila explains why she decided another run at Resident Evil was a good idea.
Let me see if I've actually got this. Okay, this is Resident Evil.
I'm attached to her now. I'm attached to the story. Where is it going to go? You know, we're always excited writing these new scripts, like wondering what's going to happen to everybody and where this is going to take us. And so, you know, now I feel in a sense like it's family. I just think it's really kind of become such a huge part of my world and the training process and being able to just go through all these adventures. I mean, it's a lot of fun.
Who is we when she says we are writing these scripts? I have no idea who writes the Resident
Evil. People.
But I mean, is there...
She has people.
Is there a screenwriter who...
Well, her husband directs them, so maybe he's the other part of the we.
But I mean, is there somebody who actually writes those movies? I'm not trying to be just a guy who knocks a video game film for its own sake. The Resident Evil movies are terrible.
I actually liked the first one. I thought it was a bad sort of zombie-like.
What is this?
Zombie
is it the fourth
kind of
one they're going to make now?
I guess. Yeah.
Well, so maybe I am viewing it harshly through the prism of 2 and 3.
At the time, it was actually the first palatable video game movie that came out.
By the way, just that little popping sound is me. I have to turn a thing off.
What are you fiddling with?
No, it's this... What? Pardon me?
You're fiddling with something.
Yes, I am, Don. All right. I like to call it the man in the boat. All right. I had like a little... My headphone...
See, now I'm completely confused anatomically.
My headphone cable kept unplugging this thing, and so I had to rearrange the... I had to reorientate, which is a word, all the configurations. Maybe I'm doing this, though. Maybe it's like it's like looking through a series of windows, and if there's a clean window... But it's way over there, and there's two dirty windows between you and it. Even the clean window looks dirty. Maybe that's it. I'm looking at it through backward through the prism of, Resident Evil 3 and 2 and what. And I think, plus, just the attachment of that guy's name to it, also the fact that he's married to Mila Jovovich, which seems to violate any number of laws of the universe and fairness and fundamental truth and right.
She is pretty awesome.
She's fantastic. And not to be this guy, but, I interviewed her, And you know, what do I know? I was just like in touch with her for 9 minutes or something. But she seemed very legitimately charming. Now she's an actress, so who knows? Maybe that's just a little act she was putting on. But she seemed like a legitimately funny person. It's not like she's without talent. And that she's with that guy. It just doesn't make any sense.
Well, now that I have indoctrinated you into the cult of Timothy Oliphant, you should go
you
seek
to
out
getaway.
A perfect getaway.
You said that it was a fantastic film.
It really is. It's one of these movies. It's an incredibly clever movie because it begins so sort of. It seems really trite and predictable and ham-fisted at the beginning, and it's deliberately paced.
That's
and
what
written
you said. It was
as
like
such.
They set it up and then they subvert it
to kind of fool you into thinking you're watching a certain kind of movie, and then it just sort of takes this right turn and becomes something wholly different and far better. And Timothy Oliphant is awesome.
He really is.
And it's like Mila Jovovich and Timothy Oliphant and Steve Zahn are the three principals, and all three of them are just terrific.
And I'm almost certain that is what she was pimping when I interviewed her. I think that's why she did the show, because she was pushing that movie. And I think it was colored a little bit by the fact that she herself did not seem terribly interested in the movie. Mm. It was one of those things where, hey, tell me about your new movie. And she's like, it's a fun little, it's a fun flick. You can go see it, and it's a good way to spend a Saturday. And then she just sort of drifted off into like a series of weird ellipses and open vowel sounds. So, all right, well, I'll have to go see that at some point. All right, so that is The Perfect Getaway. Here is Don Tiggler at the Legion of News News Desk. By the way, don't forget, Legion of News is available on your mobile device. It is mobile.pdx.fm. And, of course, you can also get it in archived form at legionofnews.com, at pdx.fm, or via iTunes.
A Texas-born fugitive known as the Barbie, who allegedly led a violent smuggling network, grinned as he was paraded in handcuffs before reporters on Tuesday. The third suspected drug lord to fall in Mexico in the past 10 months in a coup for President Felipe Calderon's war on cartels.
He's known as the Barbie?
The Barbie.
Not just Barbie.
No, he's
the Barbie.
B-A-R-B-I-E? Yeah. Like,
does that
like
mean
in the
something?
Doll. I don't know.
Is it like being the Batman?
I think so.
Only Mexican?
It is. It's like being the Batman, only your waist is much smaller.
For a minute, when you said waist, I thought you meant like butt waist.
Butt waist? Oh,
you know,
that, yes.
That, okay, never mind.
Edgar Valdez
Which would be true if you were a Barbie, by the way. That is a fact.
Well, here we are. Edgar Valdez Villarreal, who got his improbable nickname from his fair complexion, is wanted in the United States for allegedly smuggling tons of cocaine. In Mexico, he's blamed for a brutal turf war that has included bodies hung from bridges, decapitations, and shootouts as he and a rival fought for control of the divided Beltran Leyva cartel.
I just don't understand this. I don't... look, I don't mind to be all like Stringer Bell about it or whatever, but I don't get these guys who have... You said smuggling tons of cocaine, and are we to assume, and I think we are, that that's not like a figurative tons. I mean, that's like actual thousands and thousands of pounds
tons
of cocaine. I don't understand guys like this who have, you know, they've divided up whatever territory, whatever turf, between them and, like, some other guy. And each of them is running half the city or whatever. And they've got to be making, like, billions of dollars over the course of a decade or two. I mean there's got to be hundreds of millions of dollars there. But it's just not enough somehow. You've got to get the attention of the law by going and shooting your rival in the head. Why would you not... that would be like me deciding that, you know, well, I don't know, I've got a 12 share, but I need a 13 share. I better go shoot Lars Larson in the face.
But that's the thing that I don't understand in a lot of ways. It's like I don't understand that with corporations, for example. You know, you look at a company like, say, Nike and the billions of dollars they make, and that they could cut into their profits to a certain extent if they, say, didn't use slave labor to make things. You know, you have sports people who are, like, you know, getting, like, ridiculous sums of money to play games. There is a point at which, to me, it seems like, you know, how much money do you actually need?
Well,
and with something like this, when you're exporting tons of cocaine, and you must be a multimillionaire several times over at this point. It seems to me there ought to be a point where the risk is outstripping the amount of money you already have banked.
Yeah,
why do you keep doing it?
Well, that's my thing. And it's like, to me, it's not even like that. It's not even the whole issue of, well, you know, you've got enough money. Why? You know, what's it all about, Chet? Why do you keep going to work? You're already vastly wealthy.
It's the love of the job. I just love running a cartel.
I love being a gangster. Well, and who wouldn't? I mean, to me, it's not even really that. To me, it's a much more prosaic thing of like, as somebody once said, you know, it's like the cops don't show up because of the drugs. The cops show up because of the bodies that come from turf wars, that come from the drugs. Mm-hmm. So it just seems like bad business to be off ganking a guy.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
And dangling them from bridges without any heads on them.
That's right. I do like the idea that there's something kind of endearing and sort of sinister about the fact that he's apparently some, you know, this very feared gangster, but he's called the Barbie.
Yeah, and Barbie.
Not Barbie. I mean,
he's kind of pretty.
And it is because of the doll. Well, that's how you know he's a badass, right? Is that they could call him, like, you know, the shiny pink pony. But he could do that because it's like, because he'll have your feet put into a meat grinder or whatever. Or who's that guy, the stew maker?
The stew maker.
Man, I love the stew maker. Can I just say, looking back over the fields of my memory, that is when I knew that you would work out really well on this program. It was like 2 years ago. What was the deal with the guy? Why did he get... there was some gangster in, like, South America or something, and he got given the name of Stewmaker.
Actually, he worked for the gangsters. He was the guy who disposed of the bodies. And the gangsters, all the cartel guys and the gangsters would give the Stewmaker...
He was like the cleaner.
...the bodies.
Yeah.
And then he would put them in these drums with solvents and liquefy them and then pour them out in the desert somewhere.
I wonder if that was a name he gave himself as, like, a marketing ploy. Sort of, well, I got to call myself something. I can't just be Jorge. About the needle nose pliers.
The liquefier. No, that's not good.
The emulsifier. Yeah, no, it's too technical. The frappe maker. suddenly I've made
that's
him.
No pretty.
I've made him a guy from Ratatouille all of a sudden. Well, whatever. Anyway.
Yeah, suddenly he's French.
That is when I knew you'd work out.
I am the stew maker.
But when you came in, you're like, I've got the best story ever. It's this guy and he liquefies bodies in acid. He's called the stew maker. And I was like, that Dawn Taylor, let's keep an eye on her. She's going places. Well, 2 days in a row now, I have a horrible segue from a story based in Mexico to, if only Aaron Duran was here, really, just to make it a trifecta.
I wonder if I'm doing this, like, subconsciously, since I'm setting you up this way.
Castalia Language Center. To learn more about this fine school, go to PortlandSpanish.com. I'm so sorry. Go to PortlandSpanish.com.
Well, if you speak Spanish, it will help you avoid the cartels and the gangsters when you are on your vacation to Mexico.
It's well, it's like a what not to wear, but it's like what where not to go.
Right.
You know, if you're wandering through any city, even our own fine city of roses, maybe certain places you want to avoid, maybe certain times of the day, unless you're looking for illicit thrills, which I know none of the none of you are because you're all clean living people. Anyway, Castalia Language Center, it is a small private school in downtown Portland. It offers Spanish language classes for adults. Now, here's the thing. Now, you may not actually find that that's a thing. Like, you may not actually have to avoid, neighborhoods, where there's just, like, full-on gunplay, like, all the time. That may not be a thing you find yourself being plagued with a lot. But there is the thing of, where you're wandering and you're supposed to meet, you're meeting up with a friend because you're both, maybe you're both on vacation. You happen to be in the same city. This is actually very true. Now, this is completely true. My wife is going to Spain in October, and it turns out it's one of those, like, small world things where she's going to Spain. Turns out a friend of hers from Utah that she hadn't seen in a long time is actually going to be in Spain in the same city at the same time. And so they're going to meet up, and it's not even Madrid. It's not even like a very, in a large sort of centralized city. It's like, I don't know, some village on the outskirts or wherever. But the point is, if you're trying to meet up in a place where you don't necessarily speak the language, and you don't have a firm grasp of it in a conversational sense, and you're trying to meet up with somebody on some street corner, some far flung place in some country you don't live, it's just going to be a road to frustration. And there are more and more places where it comes in handy, and if not actually crucial and vital, to speak Spanish. So Castalia Language Center, they specialize in teaching adults to speak Spanish because adults learn differently than kids. They specialize in small class sizes, so it's no more than 8 students, and it's a comfortable, relaxed environment. And most importantly, they specialize in teaching you the actual language. So there's lots to learn about the culture and the development of the language and how the language actually functions in a mechanical sense, and that's all great and that's all interesting. What's most important is that you can actually use it. So don't take it from me. You go to PortlandSpanish.com right now. You just type it into your browser right now. PortlandSpanish.com, all one word, and find out more about Castalia Language Center. And please do tell me you heard it right here on Legion of News. This is Dawn Taylor.
Let's do our science news.
Fantastic. Here's science, which is marching onward through this, a news, which is Legion.
NASA's new star recruit is made of nuts and bolts. Robonaut 2 is set to become the first dexterous humanoid robot to blast into space, where it will live aboard the International Space Station and perform tasks, quote, too dangerous or too boring.
Before going mad and killing all of the human occupants.
Called R2 for short, the robot has arms and hands and fingers, but no legs. It will be fixed to a pedestal to begin with, but will be given new attachments like legs and wheels as they are developed.
A pedestal before which the human occupants will kneel before they are decapitated in a most grisly fashion.
For the past month, R2 has been keeping its fans up to date on the journey to space through Twitter and Facebook. I have my protective cover on for the night. What a busy day. Glad I'm getting a break tonight, it said after reaching the Kennedy Space Center, where it was packed for travel aboard flight STS-133.
After apparently achieving self-awareness and learning how to type.
Good thing they labeled my box, read another update. I was worried they might forget about me.
Am I the only one who's creeped out by this? I think if you start teaching, here's the thing. If you teach robots, Dawn, that they can integrate into society with the rest of us, then it just becomes a problem decades down the line.
Well, Mr. Emerson, the robot is not actually updating Twitter
says
and
you.
Facebook.
How do you know?
Because
you
it, have says, all... it says right here in the story.
Let me ask you this.
It says right here on this printed page.
Let me ask you. Do you have
right in front of me.
Do you have any proof other than the word of the government that the robot has not achieved self-awareness?
That's true. They could just make up that there's a man named Joe Bibby, who is a media and communications lead for NASA's Software, Robotics, and Simulation Division at Johnson Space Center in Houston.
Do you think the government would tell you if they had a robot that had achieved self-awareness? No, they would have that guy, Joe Bibby, come out and spread falsehoods to
you. It was me. I'm the one on Facebook.
Yeah.
It's not the robot.
Seriously.
We try to keep it light and fun so everyone can understand what's going on, he said, and we definitely like to put some humor in there. And we get a lot of interaction from people asking fun questions like, are you related to HAL 9000? Which I don't think that's a fun question.
No.
That's a fearful question.
No, and I bet that R2 doesn't answer that either. I bet he just says, next question.
Be gone, human.
I bet that while he's giving this press conference, Joe Bibby, I bet the R2 NASA bot has his family like in a shed somewhere and has a gun to their heads.
There's actually a whole division of NASA bots that are just replicating themselves, and they make their robot slaves update their Facebook pages.
Well, they've got this whole thing now where they're talking about the computer. talking about computers, like in hardware and then also software, where it is so complicated that rather than have a human actually fix it or repair it, it is easier in some ways to have the machine create an additional machine that is able to fix it. So,
and the next thing you know, you've got Terminators.
It's hard to see how that's going to work out.
Then
really.
You get Terminators.
That's what I'm saying.
Also, in the science realm, I'll just ask this question right now. I do have a listener on the text box asking for information on how to listen on his mobile device.
Which mobile device is it?
iPhone.
No, wait, hold on a second.
His iPhone 4.
No. Just before we start talking about this, is this going to lead to another, like, sigh-laden series of discussions where I endeavor to figure out which phone to buy?
Oh, no,
and
because...
And then you sit there and file your fingernails and stare at the carpet and tell me it's dull?
Oh, no, because I'm looking forward to talking to you about this.
See, that's a lie.
No, I am. I have come to a whole new understanding and way of thinking about this whole phone thing.
I was going
to talk to you about it in the next show.
Not unlike a woman faking her pleasure during the act of sex, I don't even really care if you're sincere about this. As long as you're making all the right noises over there, I don't care if it's real or not. So if you tell me it's fine, if you tell me it's good for you, baby, I'm going to assume it's good for you.
Talking to you about iPhones is the best, Rick.
Okay.
The best.
Well, you don't really have to oversell it. Don't splatter yourself all over the ceiling. So what is it?
You would like to listen to the show live on his iPhone 4.
So here's what you do. Sir or madam is the case. My wife says it's a sir. Send an email to, and this is really for anybody. I'm assuming he's talking about Rick Emerson's show, this show.
I don't know. He says, can I listen to the show live on my iPhone 4? I think he might mean this show.
Okay. Let's just stop here. If you want to listen to this, by which I mean Legion of News or any of the fine programming here at PDX.FM, it is very simple. You go to mobile.pdx.fm. That's how you do it. Mobile.pdx.fm. Now, if you are talking about the Rick Emerson radio program, which comes up at 1 o'clock at rickemerson.com, if you're talking about the Rick Emerson show, we are right now in the, it's sort of an elongated beta stage, but we're in we're doing a limited rollout of our mobile stream. But if you want to be one of the testers for that, if you want to listen to the Rick Emerson show on your mobile device, you just send an email to tech, just like it sounds, T-E, and not like Shatner tech, I mean T-E-C-H, tech at rickemerson.com. Send an email to tech at rickemerson.com and just say, hey, I want to test out the Rick Emerson mobile stream, and they'll send you the information, and bada bang, you'll be a beta tester for that. So yes, the answer is it's you can do it right now, Legion of News. It's just mobile.pdx.fm. Rick Emerson show, you can do it too. Just send an email to tech at rickemerson.com, ask him if to be a mobile tester, and it'll be done. There you go. Here's Don Taylor.
There may be a reason grandparents repeat the same stories over and over again.
They have holes in their brain.
According to a new study, older people are more likely than younger people to forget with whom they've shared information.
Are you kidding me? This is an actual story?
Yes, it is.
Old people forget things and tell the same stories over and over again, regardless of whether the young folk want to
hear them. Dollar study shows. The study investigated two types of memory: source memory, or your recollection of who told you a piece of information, and destination memory, which is your recollection of which people you've informed. Not only were older people bad at remembering to whom they told information,
they were
very confident in their mistaken memories.
Of course they were.
Older adults are additionally highly confident, compared to younger adults, that they have never told people particular things when they actually already had. Study co-author Nigel Gopi, a cognitive scientist at the Rotman Research Institute, said, "This overconfidence presumably causes older adults to repeat information to people." I won't go on with the story because it's kind of one of those, really?
It would be ironic if you did go on with the story, though, on and on and on, and then started back at the beginning again. While wearing an onion on your belt, which was the style at the time.
A stocky two-clawed relative of Velociraptor and feathered dinosaurs has been discovered in Romania. Balar Bondoc, which means stocky dragon, is the first meat-eating dinosaur to be described that lived in Europe during the final 60 million years of the Age of Dinosaurs. Balar may be one of the largest predators in this ecosystem because not even a big tooth has been found in Romania after over 100 years of research.
Was this written by Romanians?
I believe so. This would be paleontologist Zoltan Sicki.
That's a big yes.
Of the University of Bucharest.
Zoltan. Really?
Zoltan.
Is he going to tell my fortune afterward?
The new dinosaur was about 6 to 7 feet long. It had functional big toes with large claws, presumably for slashing prey, in addition to a claw on the second toe that's typical of that group of dinosaurs. Its feet and legs were short and stocky, with bones fused together there, and large muscle attachment areas on the pelvis, indicating the dinosaur was built for strength over speed. Its anatomy shows it probably hunted in a different way than its less stocky relatives. Compared to Velociraptor, Balar was probably more of a kickboxer than a sprinter, and it might have been able to take down larger animals than itself, as many carnivores do today.
Let me ask you this about the Velociraptor. That's the thing I find most interesting in this. Yep. I don't want to sound daft, but... the Velociraptor's not made up? That's a real thing?
Yeah.
When did they discover that? Because they never taught me about the Velociraptor when I was a kid. They've never met. I think literally the first time I heard about the Velociraptor was in Jurassic Park.
Yeah. I think that it was discovered not too long before Michael Crichton actually wrote Jurassic Park.
And he just, dibs! And just grabbed it and stuck it into a book. Because I
think it's one of the later discoveries.
It's not like I thought that, Spielberg or Crichton or somebody made it up as such. But I wondered if maybe it was... If it was one of those things where... Not that it didn't exist, but it was one of those, speculative dinosaurs. Scientists believe that there may have been a creature that filled the gaps between these two, whatever. And that Crichton just went, well, I'll name it because I'm Michael Crichton. And he just sort of... And he kind of bluffed at it.
Yeah. I remember being surprised that it really was a real dinosaur. I assumed it was a made-up dinosaur for Jurassic Park. Because, again, like you, in school, growing up, never heard of it.
No.
So it's like, oh, wow, that's a really cool dinosaur they made up for this movie. And then after that, then you just kept hearing about Velociraptors all the time.
Velociraptor really is the new T-Rex. It's the Beatles to the T-Rex's Sinatra. The thing about that is, well, and it's like, meanwhile in school they were busy telling us a bunch of crap that didn't exist, and I'm looking at you, Brontosaurus. Don't even get me started on that, because I have no idea how that anyway. And then was it you that was telling me that, like, now they're saying that, like, that there was no Triceratops?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just... My whole childhood is a lie.
And that's just sad, because the Triceratops is... After the T-Rex, the Triceratops is probably everybody's favorite dinosaur.
I don't even understand how they can say that there's no... I guess I'm not even really looking for an answer here, because how could you possibly explain it? Are we done with science, by the way?
Yeah,
all right.
Other than our natterings about dinosaurs.
It doesn't make any sense, because I get the deal with the Brontosaurus, that they're saying, if I've got the story right, it's that there is no Brontosaurus, because, like... Some guy mixed bag A with bag B, accidentally. And so then, it got put together wrong. And it was really just like a kooky comedy of errors where, the wrong head and the wrong body and wah, wah, it's a dinosaur and it doesn't really exist. And really, it was like this head was supposed to be on this body over here. Here's where that didn't make any sense to me. Because that then implies that they only ever found, one.
Yeah.
So...
Well, here, this commentary from the text box...
Uh-huh.
In 100 million years, if the only human remains found are that of Andre the Giant, will they teach kids that we were all huge? Scientists are stupid.
Well, I mean, you have to admit that in a crude sort of way, he's got a point there. I'm just saying, that implies that, they never found another Brontosaurus anywhere ever again. Mm. Because if they did, they would say, well, now there's two or three. But by definition, if it was just a big mix-up, then they must have only ever found one. And if they only ever found one, you think that they might consider the possibility that, they put it together incorrectly or that something got miswired. You'd think that they would find more than, they'd find a second one at some point.
Well, no, I read this this book by, what the hell is the guy's name? I'm trying to remember what the guy's name. The guy who wrote The Panda's Thumb.
Right.
Stephen Jay Gould. And I remember reading this book by Stephen Jay Gould about dinosaurs. And all I ended up taking away from it is that almost everything that we were taught about dinosaurs is absolutely wrong.
Totally. Yeah, well, because they never said that they're like birds or some crap now.
That so many of the original skeletons and things were put together wrong with the legs bent the wrong way and stuff like that. And then we were all taught that dinosaurs looked a specific way, that the T-Rex was green and this other kind was brown. And the thing is, they had no way of knowing because the skin
didn't survive.
Well,
yeah, because how would you
survive.
Possibly know? That's a thing you would just have to make up.
Yeah, they could have had feathers. They could have had a completely different kind of skin. They could have been pink for all we know. They didn't have any predators. They could have been bright pink. And the thing is, we have no idea.
I hope they were all pink and sparkly. With a decorative sash
they wore. Giant, carnivorous My Little Ponies.
Really, when you think about it, they could have worn clothes for all we know.
Yeah.
Because it'd all be rotted away. I just sound like it was something. And that's the thing that never registers when you're a kid. You never really put that together. You never just, that's because you're taught that the teacher is the sort of all-seeing authority figure. And you never go, I think you're making all of this up.
And thank you, listener, in the text box for typing, magnets, how do they work?
Seriously. Am I right? Hey, now.
All right.
Okay.
Well, in any event, has somebody done like a sort of like a meme expansion where they just go through that song, the Insane Clown Posse song, one by one and just say, here's how. I mean, that seems like a thing that had to have been done.
Somebody did a really hilarious, the Juggalos Big Book of Science for Kids that was like a children's science book that actually shows you all of these different things that are in the song. It was quite hilarious.
You know, there's a store, or there used to be anyway, on, there's actually a shop on Division that is a juggling store. And it is called Juggalos, and it predates, you know. And so I feel about them the way it's like that Tea Party bookstore in Salem that's just a bunch of hippies. And, you know, they just feel like their whole thing just got jacked from them. So I feel sad for the Juggalo store, but not that sad because they're juggling hippies, so F them. Because what are they going to do? Come kick my ass?
They'll hit you with their big bowling pin-looking things.
I'm going to ride towards you on a unicycle.
All right.
I'm going to be tall biking your way anytime soon. hey, we were talking earlier about the mobile stream for RickEmerson.com, the Rick Emerson Show mobile stream. And again, if you want to be a beta tester for that, you can do it. You just send an email to tech@RickEmerson.com. Watch this Rick Emerson Show, you say? I was only aware of the Legion of News. Well, then you're only hearing half the story and one-tenth the entertainment. So the Rick Emerson Show airs at 1 p.m. over at rickemerson.com. And if you are not a listener of the Rick Emerson Show, then you can subscribe at the low cost of just 32 cents a day. It's really the best 32 cents. You could spend this 32 cents keeping your mother alive longer, and it would still not be spent as well as if you had spent it on the Rick Emerson Show. I mean, it really is. It doesn't. You could spend the 32 cents as part of a ransom to get your family back from the stewmaker guy in Mexico. And it doesn't matter. You'd still regret that you did not have the Rick Emerson Show. If you are not subscribing, you have to do so now. If you are not able to subscribe, or perhaps you're already subscribing, but you know somebody who is not listening, you got to listen up to this. In confluence with our partners at New Millennium Maintenance, and we are offering what we're calling the Rick Emerson Grant, which is like a sort of more amusing version of, it's like welfare with more penis stories. And so we are giving away 10 one-month subscriptions to the Rick Emerson Show each and every month. And here's how you do it. You just create a YouTube video of no more than 2 minutes in length explaining why you or somebody you know ought to have a one-month subscription to the Rick Emerson Show. You send the link for that video to video@rickemerson.com. Again, send it to video@rickemerson.com. Send a link to your YouTube video of no more than 2 minutes in length saying why you or somebody you know ought to have a one-month subscription to the Rick Emerson Show, which is really, that's a $7 value right there. So, and you say to yourself, $7 isn't so much. To which I say to you, then why aren't you paying it now? Jackass.
7 months for an entire month worth
that's
of entertainment, though, is amazing. You can't even see one movie for $7
and
anymore.
Here's the thing. It's actually less than 32 cents a day, because I think we're predicating that on, like a 30-day month, which, for example, this is not. We're on the 31st day of August. So
today it was like 31.2 cents per day or something.
It really is just, if you're not subscribing now, you ought to just be ashamed of yourself. I don't know how you manage to face the day without taking your own life in some horrifically bloody fashion. I mean, I'm just saying for me. That's just my opinion. You can find out more at rickemerson.com. This is Don Taylor.
A resurgence of bed bugs across the U.S. has homeowners and apartment dwellers taking desperate measures to eradicate the tenacious bloodsuckers, with some relying on dangerous outdoor pesticides and fly-by-night exterminators. The problem's gotten so bad that the Environmental Protection Agency warned this month against the indoor use of chemicals meant for the outside. The agency also warned of an increase in pest control companies and others making unrealistic promises of effectiveness for low cost.
So wait, is there a resurgence into bed bugs everywhere, or just like in some places, like New York?
It's mainly the East Coast and the Midwest. We haven't really seen it on this coast yet. There's a big problem with it in Ohio. They're seeing them in some of the eastern states.
And bed bugs are the little red things, right?
Isn't
that the deal?
Bed bugs are small parasitic insects that feed preferably on human blood. They will feed on animal blood of any kind, but they prefer human blood. They're very, very tiny, and they're mostly active at night, so they can, like, be feeding on you in your bed, and you don't even know that they're
feeding
there.
Feeding on you in your bed.
Yeah.
So they're like I was going to make another succubus joke, but I think we've had, like, 9 of those this month already.
They were mostly eradicated through the use of DDT in the early 40s, but there's actually been a resurgence of them since about 1995.
Well, because you can't use DDT anymore, right?
Right.
Isn't that one of those things?
That's
one of those things like napalm that they've unfairly taken away from us, even though it gets rid of pesky intruders.
One of the problems now is that, The Ohio is having a horrible problem with it. Cincinnati, Columbus, Dayton, other big Ohio cities are having a horrible time with bed bugs. And they've actually asked the EPA to approve inside use of a pesticide called Propoxir, which the agency says is probably a carcinogen. And so they won't allow it for in-home use. But apparently it's one of those things that it's very effective against bed bugs. So people are going, cancer, schmancer.
Yeah, seriously, well, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, I guess if it's one thing you got kids, you don't want to be spraying your kids with cancer. But, you know, well, as I pointed out, you know, I have a shampoo that I use at home that actually says on the side of it, like, causes cancer. You know, and but I bought that at the store. Like, you know, like I had, I didn't even have the prescription for it.
And apparently I was wrong. Siegfried says in the text box that... That Willamette Week ran a story a couple of weeks ago that we have bed bugs here in Portland now as well.
Mainly just you.
It might just be me. Yeah. You're the one with the house.
No, it's true.
You know, constantly.
No, I got fruit flies. That's the thing. I like to think the fruit flies and the spiders are keeping the bed bugs at bay. They're trying to keep a sort of equilibrium happening at my place.
Authorities around the country have blamed house fires on people misusing highly flammable garden and lawn chemicals to fight their bed bugs. Experts also warn that some hardware products, bug bombs, cedar oil, and other natural oils,
crowbars,
just merely cause the bed bugs to scatter out of sight and hide. So, and then pest control companies are also sort of preying on people's fear of the bed bugs. One company in Newark, New Jersey, was accused in July of applying chemicals not approved for indoor use throughout 70 homes and apartment units, even spraying mattresses and children's toys.
I think they should just give you like a sort of like a you know, like if you're getting curtains, they show you like a swatch book or whatever. They should just say, look, we got like seven different choices here. Now, choice number one, kind of effective. Really just, you know, just gives them a headache more than anything, but totally safe for you and your family. And then, choice number seven, kills them dead and makes sure that they never come back. Probably will make you go blind in one eye. You know, and then, you know, but then between you have like two, three, four, five, and six. They had to just give you the option.
Yeah.
You know, say, this will kill them, might kill you, probably not.
Because we know how you feel about this. You are totally willing to gamble with cancer if the product will do what it's supposed to do effectively.
Well, because I don't even view it as a gamble. I just view it as like a, you know how it's like the house always wins? Here's the thing. The house always wins, friend. I don't care whether it's cancer or like an ill-working garbage disposal. You're hosed. So there is no escape. You know, you will be hunted down and killed by something in life, regardless. But if I can live it sort of dandruff-free in the meantime, God bless it. That's what I'm going to do.
And I totally understand these stories about people misusing pesticides because I myself have like have almost killed myself or made myself violently ill on several different occasions of my life by just spraying the crap out of something or pouring straight something around the foundation of the house to try to kill the ants.
Well, you got
to
use it incorrectly.
And then just going, my lungs later and then realizing, oh, yeah, I could have died.
Well, insecticides are like drugs. I mean, if you follow the prescribed remedy for using or applying them, you're never going to get the results you're really after.
And honestly, you know, if you have a bee in your kitchen and you're afraid of, or a wasp, and you're afraid of stingy insects like I am, and all you have is ant spray, really the only option you have is just to stand there and spray like half the can on the wasp to drown it.
Enough Raid will kill anything. That's the
until it just can't move because you've drowned it in the stuff.
Yeah, no, the thing about Raid is, I'm not saying it's all the same, but I'm saying how much difference could there possibly be? I mean, there's, you know, like a handful of chemicals they change from can to can. You know, a can of Black Flag is a can of Black Flag. It doesn't really matter. You just, you know, that is, you know what kills it? It's just the that. Because it's just going, I can't see, bam, and it flies into a window, or it falls on the counter long enough, you know, for it to, you know, for it to get stuck to something or whatever. That's the whole deal. Remind me to tell you someday about the place, Dawn, where I overcame my fear of spiders. It was a specific place.
Ah.
It wasn't just a time. I've talked about how I went through a time, a figurative place. There was a literal, actual, physical place where I overcame. It was like a, you know what it was? It was like I was Frodo, venturing to Mount Doom or something. It was a place into which I went, and then I came out having become a man.
Well, I'm writing this down. Rick Place, fear of spiders.
All right. Do you actually have a to-don't list? That's awesome.
Yeah, Christy Turnquist gave me this for my birthday. It's a
to-don't.
It says to-don't.
Fantastic.
And it's the subcategories are to avoid, to delay, to pawn off, and to sabotage.
Genius. So I couldn't afford bug spray. But because I was a young suburban youth, a scraggly-haired, mullet-wearing jackass, I just had Aquanet. So I would just use that, and so then I got like an insect statuary around my apartment, and I sort of felt like Medusa, you know, striding through and looking at, you know, the cockroach. It was all, you know, like in mid flea pose, so to speak. Here's Don Taylor.
Remind me at some one day to tell you my wasps in the tiki story.
Okay.
I had wasps in my tiki, if you know what I mean. Let's do the entertainment news.
All right, then. Before we do that, let me make sure that I give appropriate shouts out, as they say.
Yes.
To Mr. Michael Beatty of The Cleaning Solution, 971-533-3211. By the way, I can just tie this into, well, not nothing particular, but, you know, I mentioned that Aaron Duran of geekinthecity.com, who has heard of many of the who's basically heard on every program that airs everywhere in Portland. But he, you know, he works at Things from Another World, and Things from Another World is in turn one of the sponsors of Outlook Portland, which is this show I do on the CW and blah, blah, blah. The point is that they were filming a new the CW was out there. They're filming a new TV commercial. Northrop 32 was filming a new TV commercial at Things from Another World.
And this was not the one you were in, though.
No.
Because you were in one of their commercials.
Where I was holding an Arkham Asylum thing and just going, "Hello, sir. How much for this Arkham Asylum set?" You know, and sucking in my gut. And meanwhile, Aaron is mouthing. I don't think you can hear us speaking, but I am talking that way. I'm gesturing.
Sure. You look incredibly awkward in that commercial, by the way. It's like you're not actually speaking. You're just standing there holding this thing, and it just looks like someone told you, pretend you're buying something.
Well, you know what I'm no good at is placeholder. You know, it's funny because I ad-lib basically for like 3 hours a day here or whatever. But if I'm going to ad-lib, like if someone just says, like, and you're on camera, ad-lib. Or you don't get this probably, but like if you're anybody who's like a comedian or they get the whole like, hey, say something funny.
Oh, yeah.
I can never say anything funny like on command. It just doesn't work. So they're like, okay, just ad-lib some stuff. You be customer. Aaron, you be the clerk and, you know, whatever. And it's like, again, I talk for 3 hours every day here without a script, really. So it's like I ought to be able to do it. But instead, what do I just fall back on? I just fall back on reciting crap from Kevin Smith films, you know. And then meanwhile, Aaron is just going, you know, 37 or whatever. But they were filming a new commercial of Things from Another World. So Aaron Duran sends me a text and says, OMG, we're filming this commercial here. Oh, my God, the place is a pigsty. I need to get it cleaned. What's the number for Things from Another World? Or for the cleaning solution, because I need to get the Things from Another World carpet cleaned. So I hooked him with the cleaning solution in the person of Michael Beatty, and his number is 971-533-3211, 971-533-3211. Now, don't be like Aaron. Don't wait until the last possible minute, because I'm not always going to be around for you to text me, find out the number. And you're just going to be tearing your hair out, trying to figure out exactly how to get the carpet cleaned at the house before your wife comes home and figures out you were trying to change the oil to a 64 Impala in your living room. So you write this number down, 971-533-3211. Whether it is carpet, whether it's upholstery, whether it's tile, whether it's stain remover, whether it's basic upkeep or maintenance. Hell, maybe it's not even at home. Maybe it's at your office. Maybe it's at your place of business. Maybe it's a piece of furniture. They can get it looking clean. They can get it looking new. And then, most importantly, they can actually keep it looking that way, like, forever. So, 971-533-3211. 971-533-3211. The cleaning solution. All right, here's your entertainment news. Bada bing.
Former Guns N' Roses guitarist Slash filed for divorce from his estranged wife, Perla Farrar, Monday in L.A. Superior Court, citing irreconcilable differences. TMZ reports the couple separated on July 15th. Slash, who married Farrar in October 2001, is seeking joint physical and legal custody of their two sons. Reality star Paris Hilton claims she had no idea there was cocaine in her purse, as an officer's report stated that Hilton had not seen it and thought it was gum. Hilton faces felony drug possession charge after being arrested last weekend in Vegas. She also claims she borrowed the purse, which contained 0.8 grams of cocaine, from a friend.
Because cocaine fiends are always lending their drugs out. Cocaine guys are always like really, really generous. We know, no. Everybody have some of my cocaine. Yeah. I certainly won't kill you.
Now, to be fair, if you didn't know what one of those little white bindles of cocaine looked like, you might think it was gum. On the other hand, what are the odds that Paris Hilton does not know what one of those little white bindles of cocaine is?
I was going to say almost non-existent. I won't say where. I will say where. It was at CBS. We used to, every now and again, and I honestly don't know why or who or how. I don't know to whom we would describe this. I honestly have no idea. But in the, you know, that downstairs, the unisex bathroom at CBS, there was the men's, there was the women, and then there was like the wheelchair bathroom, which is the one everybody used because it was the only one you could really lock, and, you know, and it was the only one that was actually sort of private.
And it didn't smell as bad as the men's bathroom.
It didn't smell like death. But on occasion, and whoever was doing this was just so unbelievably sloppy. On occasion, you would go in and you would just find like a little empty, you know, bin, a little, they'd taken a piece of paper and they'd folded it in like the little, you know, like the weird, like envelope style thing that had obviously been used to transport some amount of drug into the bathroom. And then they would just like leave the thing behind, which is, and I thought cocaine would like, I thought it was supposed to focus you, sort of sharpen your attention to detail. Apparently not.
I just wanted to be like, I did my drugs.
Served its purpose.
Yeah. It's like me leaving my coffee cup sitting around with like that last quarter inch of coffee in it, I suppose.
You got what you needed.
Yeah. Producers Eli Roth and Eric Newman decided not to go 3D with the new horror film The Last Exorcism, a character-driven film which is getting rather solid reviews.
So great we get to talk about Paul W.S. Anderson and Eli Roth in one show.
I know.
That's great.
Geeks. Roth believes there's 3D fatigue, and sometimes moviegoers want to be scared by just good old-fashioned acting.
Oh, I'm sorry. And this is Eli Roth.
Right.
Let me make sure that I have this here. Okay, here we go. This is, let's see. I have to turn down one of these things. It'll be that.
No.
3D prize.
I think it's the subject. I think, I don't know. I mean, I certainly think there's a 3D fatigue going on right now after Glotten. You know, people are, you know, with kids' movies, Toy Story 2D was outgrossing the 3D one because kids are getting tired with the glasses. But that's why with Last Exorcism, you know, there was people who asked us,
somebody
do you
needs a little bit more cocaine.
It makes it really better. I think it matters to the story. We're producing a remake of Funhouse in 3D, and we think that's going to
be
a great...
3D.
That movie should be in 3D.
Yeah.
The fun of it is seeing it in 3D, just like the fun of Piranha was seeing it in 3D. But with Last Exorcism, we just wanted to tell a very straightforward, you know, sort of stripping everything away. That's why there's no makeup, there's no effects. It's a very... just a pure character movie. If,
that wasn't me making a snoring sound, by the way.
No, that was me.
The audience is really responding.
I thought that was actually the other. Who's the other guy?
I don't know.
The making a movie at the price we made the movie at, not making it 3D, not making it rated R.
Oh, that's Eric Newman.
Was actually as filmmakers a really ambitious thing.
I wonder how long this cut is.
And I think, you know, we take a fair amount of pride.
It's already too long.
Okay, then it's done. Your wish is my command. Be gone, Eli Roth. I know that I should go see Last Exorcism, but I'm not gonna.
I'm not sure why. I hear it's not bad. I hear it's okay, but it's kind of like, isn't this... I don't know. I just don't care. And I love horror movies.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's... I watched the original Piranha again over the weekend, which is...
written by John Sayles.
So good.
It's such a good movie.
I might use that as our show open today. Those of you who don't subscribe to the Rick Emerson Show, again, fools. But also... you're missing out every day, so we start every day show with a speech, usually a scene from a movie or a TV show. Sometimes it's like a little song, or it's like we had some Shel Silverstein spoken word stuff last week. But we start every day with usually a movie scene that we play. And I pulled something from the original Piranha, which I have. I don't know if I'll do it today or not. I have something else.
Now you need to go back and revisit Alligator.
Alligator, man. I haven't seen Alligator for...
also written by John Sayles and from that same time period.
And then, you know what I saw actually a couple months ago is Grizzly.
Yes.
Because I was going through this whole phase of watching Jaws knockoffs. Because I was... such a circuit. This is a pointless story. But I went to a bookstore and I got this Joe Bob Briggs book from, I don't know, maybe like 84. Because I think it was to coincide with Jaws 3D. And Joe Bob Briggs had done this whole piece about Jaws knockoffs. And so I was going through and watching them one by one. Tentacles, which is about a squid. Orca the Killer Whale with John Huston. WTF. I mean, it really is just... so that was like a whole week at my house. All right, here's Don. I have a life. Here's Don Taylor.
Reese Witherspoon, like many Hollywood celebrities, has her issues with the paparazzi, even though she admits that what they're doing is perfectly within their legal rights. However, the Oscar-winning actress admits there's a gray line when it comes to being photographed in public.
95% of paparazzi are doing things legally and on the up and up, and they, you know, we have the First Amendment in this country. There's a right to free speech. There's a right to take pictures of public figures. The gray area for me is, what is a public figure? Is a three-year-old child a public figure just because they're born of famous parents? I don't know. That's kind of gray to me. My opinion, no, they're not famous. They haven't done anything to be famous.
I think the deal with celebrities, though, is I think celebrities of a certain level just shouldn't be allowed to have children. Because it just screw. No, because it just because it, you just figured the kid has no chance. You know, and not even necessarily get money, because depending on how big an F up the parent is, the kid might not even get the money from it. Because you say, well, he's a celebrity's kid, but that doesn't really mean anything. Celebrities go bankrupt all the time. You know, and especially if you get saddled with some weird nutso name, like celebrities are always given their, you know. I guess it worked out well for Eddie Van Halen's kid, because he's now playing, he's now the bass player in Van Halen, which is like one of those things that just makes no sense. But, you know, what are you going to do? But I remember when he named his kid Wolfgang Van Halen, and I was like, really? What a jackass you are, Eddie Van Halen. Wolfgang Van Halen is just, I mean, really, unless you are some mad piano composer who lives in a castle somewhere in Scotland, you can't really get away with being named that. No, I think celebrities ought to, they ought to have, it ought to be like a little fame exchange. You know, like when you get the Academy Award or you pass $5 million a movie, like we just, you know, we just cut your ovaries right out.
Well,
on that note, let's do, yes?
I was just going to say, if you want to watch the TV tonight, new on TV tonight, we have a new episode of 19 Kids and Counting on TLC. In the new episode, Josie Duggar, Home at Last, Josie finally reunites with her 18 siblings in Arkansas, but not before Jim, Bob, Michelle, and the kids pack up and say goodbye to Little Rock, which has become their home away from home. There's also a program on National Geographic Channel called Explorer. And the episode tonight is about scientific advances that are potentially turned into biological weapons.
Now, that's fantastic.
Which I think that should be
awesome. Do they give an example?
Somewhere.
I'm trying to think of one. Other than that thing where they're going to equip dinosaurs with lasers.
Well, no, they just say that in turn raises the stakes for any government leader who would need to know when critical public systems such as water and transportation are
I think
at
risk.
This
is a sign, actually. Read the description of that show one more time, the Explorer show.
It's called Inside Bioterror, and it examines the hair-raising issue of how so many new scientific advances have been perverted into potential biological weapons. That, in turn, raises the stakes for any government leader who would need to know when critical public systems such as water and transportation are
okay.
at risk.
That totally seals it. That confirms it. We're playing the Piranha clip at the beginning of the show, because it's what's his name? It's Kevin McCarthy doing that whole, it was a biological weapon to kill the Viet Cong. No, I'm making Nixon.
There's also a new episode of Louie on FX, and if you're not watching Louie,
that's
you
what
be.
I can be watching, because I'm all done with Breaking Bad. So.
Yeah, check it out. And that's only a half hour show, so they're awesome. They're a quick watch.
Fantastic. All right, there you go. That's your entertainment news, which brings us to the end of another installment of Legioner News. Legioner News is brought to you each and every weekday by PDX.fm and originates from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk is Dawn Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show begins next at rickemerson.com. This, however, has been an exciting installment of
Legion of News on PDX.fm.